And looking into the reflections in the darksome mirror, you never know what may be staring back. Thank you for listening to Reflections in the Darksome Mirror, an otherworldly dark fantasy audiobook and solo play adventure inspired by classic fantasy tabletop games. This audio experience is intended to blend a sense of novel-esque character drama with the randomness of a tabletop game. Artificial intelligence has not been used in any way to contribute to this podcast, and I, the creator, do not consent to the use of this podcast for AI training material. This podcast is based on a tabletop game written by yours truly, which will use a custom rule set which shares its name with the podcast itself. Here we have characters with 6 attributes and ranks and 22 different skills. Most actions in the game are mechanically represented by rolling a number of d10s or 10-sided dice, and seeing how many of them come up as 8 or higher. Depending on the task, one dice may be enough to pass, while more difficult tasks may require more dice to come up as successes. There are other modifiers that may be explained or are relevant to specific characters. For a more in-depth summary of the rules or a look at the character sheets, see the links in the podcast description. Additionally, you could listen to episode 0 of this podcast for more information if you have not already done so. My name is Nephilos, and this is my project and passion. It's a pleasure to share it with everyone. This podcast is intended for an adult audience and contains mature themes. Listener discretion is advised. The mechanical run of the story is controlled by the dice. Aside from my established lore of the world, I will attempt to move the story forward via character motivations and the way the dice land, but nothing else. But before the die start to land, I think that's enough introduction, and everyone listening would probably prefer to hear a story. So without further ado, thank you again for listening to Reflections in the Darksome Mirror. A shrieking gale shattered the tranquility of sleep. Shinnereth gasped and sat upright, eyes frantically searching her bedroom. She was forced immediately to close her eyes and shelter behind her arm. The wind had brought with it a million grains of stinging sand. Eventually, from beneath the crook of her elbow, she stole a gaze at the room. She tore the sheet from her bed and used it to shroud her face. From beneath the sheet held taut, she could make out the overcast sky beyond the windows. The sky was exposed, as if the window panes and shutters had been swept away. The diffused light of the moon and stars barely allowed vision. Questions raced through her mind even faster than the wind. She moved to walk further toward the center of her house, pushing against one door to get into the main hallway. There was so much sand on the floor that she wasn't able to easily open the door. Shinnereth realized that she would need to force it with her shoulder. Behind the dice. This section will focus on discussions around mechanics and situations revolving around dice rolls specifically. Here we have Shinnereth attempting the first dice roll of the show. This will be an athletics roll. Shinnereth will roll 2 strength dice, 3 athletics dice, and 1 bonus die for her nocturnal background. Shinnereth has rolled 2 successes out of 6 dice. If she had failed, she probably would have had to climb through the window. The door moved with difficulty, and she realized that there was some fallen debris behind it. Still, by crouching low and pushing with her legs, she was able to get it open. Relieved, she shut it behind her, and for the first time since her rude awakening, she gasped, realizing she could breathe freely. She did so and glanced around the hallway. A few bookshelves remained, though they looked as if they had aged 1,000 years and had been stripped entirely bare. Some were tipped onto the sand-strewn wooden floors. She raced through the tea room, likewise windswept and empty, and shoved open the front door, then was again assaulted by the wind. Her small front yard had once been a terraced garden, but was now only variegated dunes of sand. With her eyes once more veiled by the sheer sheet, and with the sand pelting her, she struggled to make out the shapes of the buildings in her vicinity. The usual bustling town square was entirely abandoned. She fought her way forward until she could see the nearest edge of town. The encircling wall, once intended to protect the town, had been almost entirely engulfed by sand, and beyond that was yet more desert, where before this terrible storm there had been endless trees. She noticed that surrounding the cathedral, the sacred moth groves burned, and other buildings were likewise smoldering or ablaze. One particular anomaly amongst these new anomalies pulled at her. On the far end of the town square, she could see clear sky instead of raging storm clouds. She sprinted toward it and soon was able to remove the sheet from over her face. Directly opposite the cathedral, as it always was, there was a tall mirror-like monolith, and in front of it a reflective circular pool. Unlike the rest of the town, now beaten and worn, these looked somehow untouched. The mirror was as tall and broad as the cathedral doors, and somehow pristine amidst all the chaos. Instead of a reflection, Shinnereth saw something else inside. The clear, starry sky beyond, as though it was now a window and not a mirror. She got closer, angled herself in front of the mirror, and stepped into the shallow circular pool in front of it. Ankle deep in the water, she tried to grasp what was now ahead of her. There was no reflection at all. Instead, there was an endless sidereal vista of constellations, distant swathes of stardust, and the vast darkness of the universe. She saw it with perfect and possible clarity. But there was something else, closer. The most vague outline of a reflection, drawing slowly into focus. Then she realized that it was not a reflection, but something else entirely. It moved of its own accord, a ghastly, wraith-like form. She considered running, and yet she dared to take a step forward, reaching toward the mirror. When she had given the silvery surface the slightest touch of her fingertips, the mirror rippled like water. Shinnereth awoke. There was no windstorm. The amber tranquility of the late afternoon sun shone through the blissfully intact windows above her. She looked around again with a slow caution and came to the happy realization that her earlier experience was merely a strange dream. The bookshelves, desk, and various other furniture of the room were in their usual places, and thank the sisters, not one grain of sand assaulted her senses. She had fallen asleep at her desk again. There were books spread out ahead of her. Some were sandwiched on top of each other with their pages still open. She stood up and stretched. A deep sigh let out any lingering tension from the earlier sleep-borne horrors she had experienced. Now that she knew the town was not truly a windswept ruin, she took a few steps over to the window and stared out at the front gardens. It was a small, modest garden, but given the limited size of the yard, it was an impressive thing. She saw her aunt there, crouched between a few of the raised beds, holding a fiber basket in one hand while picking berries with the other. Even now, as the sun was setting, and after attending to her archival duties, the woman was dressed in the full ceremonial garb of her office, which was a long black robe with pointed shoulders and silver filigreed hems. She had donned gloves and a lace-filled hat. As with nearly every article of clothing in the town, it was all made of moth silk. Most of it was dyed midnight black, but a broad sash of brilliant gold and red was tied in a bow around her waist to complete the ensemble. The basket she carried was lined with layers of undyed moth silk and was laden with the fruits of her harvest, elderberries, carrots, tomatoes, and silver root. The large hat she wore obscured much of her form from Shinnereth's perspective. Even so, somehow, she had sensed eyes upon her and looked up at Shinnereth. She bobbed her head at the window, separating them. Shinnereth slid the window upwards, and the cool sea air wafted over her. Shinna, a letter arrived not long ago. You should read it. Let me know what it says, Sindora said.
Yes, Aunt. It's probably just more warnings about the humans. Maybe something about my naming?
Shinnereth offered. You know well enough never to assume, Shinna, Sindora said, her tone as flat as the calm sea of Gandarath to the west.
90 winters old, and I'm still a child to her.
Shinnereth sighed inwardly, but outwardly, she adopted a diplomatic tactic.
My apologies. I'll read it and let you know. Would you like to share some tea?
Shinnereth asked, offering a hint of a smile. Shinnereth thought she could sense her aunt's smile as well, though it was difficult to tell through the veil of her hat.
That would be appreciated. Perhaps nightflower and silver root. I'll be inside in a moment, and we can share.
Sindora responded with a gesture to the basket. Shinnereth closed the window. Before making her way downstairs, she tried to clean up the haphazard sprawl of books across her desk for a moment. The memories of her dream from before troubled her as she made her way down, seeing the now, of course, intact furnishings and bookshelves. As she descended the spiral staircase down to the entryway, her eyes settled on a pile of letters, documents, books, and scrolls that she had come to expect. Of course, nearly all of them were directed to Sindora Who Gathers Knowledge, Archivist of Moonshard Bay. There was one, however, that stood out. It was a black envelope with embossed silver lines, sealed with a ribbon of matching colors, and affixed with the red seal of the Grand Academy of Dragons. And it was addressed to Sindora Who Gathers Knowledge and Shinnereth. She approached it and pulled on one end of the ribbon to break the seal and then opened it. The letter was on heavy marbled paper and the flowery scent of night phlox clung to it.
It was the same scent her mother always wore, and Shinnereth could almost hear the low, contemplative tone of her voice when reading. Shinnereth took up the letter and walked to the adjacent kitchen and tea room and began to prepare the tea while she read. Shinnereth, Sindora tells me that you've made great advances in your studies of the Dream Chronicles and in fencing alike. Though my duty to both Aranthe and the Academy demands that I spend most of my time here, your father and I have happily kept track of your progress. Tomorrow you will become of age and choose a name before the city. When you touch the mirror, you may also realize your connection to the arcane. Though each of our kind has the right to choose their profession or path according to their own desires, I do hope that you will put earnest thought into joining me here after the ceremony is concluded, and you have said your proper goodbyes. With your knowledge and talent, we are certain you would be a good fit for historian or archivist here at the Academy. Your father says you could even be involved in the very new field of research concerning dragon eggs and ancestry. In truth, this is a letter with a twofold purpose. I wish you the best for your ceremony in the future, but I also have more somber news. In my dealings with political news from both Shalastrazara and Praetoria, I have become increasingly aware of the nature of the threat the Enclave faces, from the rogue band of mercenaries prowling around Gandabrath Spear and other areas just south of Moonshar Bay. The Order of the Lion, in particular, is a concern, as you know I've written about before. While the officials in Praetoria and the governors of the bordering human provincial territories have assured me that they will order no violence against us, they have grown gradually more apathetic as to the actions of the Order. The Order continues to threaten local courts, human courts, and state that the Treaty of Gandabrath Sea was not legitimate. The human officials, of course, support the treaty as intended, but lack the teeth to enforce or rein in the Order. We fear the tenseness of a Cold War may yet evolve into a violent conflict. The result will be a war that the nearby human governors fight by proxy while feigning ignorance. We have intercepted quite a number of bribes, or at least become aware of them. The leader of the Order of the Lion himself is a cousin of the Earl of the province of Gandabrath's Ascent, and claims he cannot police what goes on in the northern corner of his own holdings. So, all the officials I have spoken to are well aware of my theories, though they do not exactly seem to believe them with the same gravitas that I do. There is nearly a decade or more of history of the Order's activities putting us on edge. As a result, swearing may not sound like a cause for alarm. However, continued strong vigilance and preparedness are necessary. Every citizen may be required to raise arms against an outside threat should it arise. As a final word, your father and I wish you the very best for your future. I know that you are of an independent mind, and I do wish our paths could cross more. If you do not decide to join us at the Academy, then we both earnestly wish you luck on your own path. Whatever path you do choose, I know Aranthe's moonlight will shine upon it. I love you, and please, tell Sindora I love her. May we all walk in the light shining from her holy wings. Signed, Serenia, who sings to the stars, and Lorthadast of Raven Hill. There was a postscript in her father's handwriting. P.S. If you do decide to come, you will have access to the best fencing instructors in all of Volgrath. I'll admit it's a bribe, but I do miss you, Shinna.
Shinna sighed heavily, but her thoughts were interrupted by the desire to not burn her aunt's tea. She prepared two cups, sprinkling a few shavings of silver root into the top of each, as tradition dictated. Then she made her way to the tea room, setting the teaplate down in the center of the table, and her letter alongside it. She glanced over at the mantel, over which hung a portrait of her fourth great-grandfather, Andros, who dances with demons, rendered in dark oils. His face seemed so serious in the painting, but she recalled his aloof and humorous demeanor when she had known him, before he had passed away a few decades ago, not long before his 900th winter. He was arrayed in dark plate armor and bore a long, curved blade of white moonsteel.
It was the same sword that, in fact, hung just below the painting itself. It was very large, as tall as Shinnereth was, though its size did not stop it from being an elegant weapon. Andros had told her that it was made for a hybrid purpose, meant to have nearly the reach of a polearm with the defensive versatility of a sword. The extensive handle was about a cubit long, and the grip, wrapped in the preserved skin of some sea beast, terminated in an impressive octagonally faceted pommel for counterbalance. The pommel and grip could serve as effective weapons in their own right if the enemy closed. The blade itself, nearly 3 cubits long,
had a strong spine and curved single edge. Though it held a keen point, the weapon was deeply curved in its last half and clearly intended for devastating slashes. The crossguard was a vaguely ovular disc, offering enough protection to the hands while still allowing the dull spine of the sword to hug close to the body in some movements. The base of the blade, the faces of the guard, and the pommel all bore etchwork in the form of flowing sigils of both the goddess Aranthe and her sister goddess Rhiannon, that is, the wings of sacred moths and the crescent moon. Andros had told her it was crafted from rare blessed moon steel. The metal was pale and had an almost pearlescent sheen. He had smiled and added that great-grandsons of the capital city smiths who made it would happily greet the bearer of the blade if it were ever seen by them again. The pommel of the weapon was pierced by a ring, and the ring currently had affixed a pennant of dark blue cloth, likewise decorated with signs of the sisters. To move it most efficiently required a dance-like movement. Briefly, she recalled the childhood joy in watching Andros, still spry in his 8th century, display the movements in their garden. There were no half measures with the weapon. It was most effective when used with a committed step and the accompanying movement of the hips, arms, and entire body. The beauty in the sword, as with the use of all elven war blades, was that when used in this manner, it was not unlike a dance. Shinnereth looked at the other smaller companion weapon displayed below the larger one. She recalled their names. Melau Shinzarod in the language of Moontongue, or Moonfire in the Devorian tongue of the humans, was the larger blade, and Dalan Thram, or Dreamknife, was the smaller. Dreamknife was a curved short sword constructed of the same steel with a similar but proportionally smaller crossguard. Her grandfather had told her that it was meant to be worn edge up higher on the waist for quick drawing in case the need arose. Shinnereth's reverie was interrupted by the sound of the door opening, and Sandora entered and placed the basket next to the tea, taking her own cup. "So, nothing groundbreaking, I imagine?" she asked, pulling the letter closer to herself to read.
"Right. Nothing unexpected,"
Shinnereth said flatly, taking a sip of her tea. It was still warm, and the sweetness of the silver root contrasted well with the herbal tang of the night flower. Sandora nodded solemnly, looking over the letter herself. "I'll ride back here shortly. Maybe one day your mother's letters will bear good omens." She sighed and took her hat off, then looked at Shinnereth directly. "Shinner, I know I've been quite a taskmistress these past decades, but I do appreciate your help with the archives. Tonight of all nights, I'm sure I can excuse you to be with your friends at the inn. I remember the night before my name ring. Have you decided what you will choose?" Sandora said. She reached a hand across the table. She had removed her gloves, and the navy blue skin of her hand held the calluses of her work perusing many countless papers. As with all moon elves or Melauthandrin, Sandora's skin held that rich azure tone. Shinnereth's, however, was different. Having a human father had rendered her own skin color a blue-gray. In her younger decades, while participating in mandatory schooling, her classmates had called it watered down, but she had come to appreciate her own shade. Sandora had often commented that her skin color reminded her of the storm giants of old, and indeed, she had always felt somewhat cold to the touch, as though their element of planar frost had somehow influenced her.
"Given my connection to Rhiannon, I've decided, Shinnereth who dances in darkness,"
Shinnereth said. It felt like a confession, somehow, choosing an homage to Rhiannon instead of Aranthe. Yet, Sandora nodded a bit. "The more traditional Maybalk, but it is a good choice, I think. Please, go be with your friends. You only have a naming once, after all," Sandora said. She withdrew a few silver coins from the folds of her sash and handed them to Shinnereth.
"Thank you, Aunt. I'll go get ready,"
Shinnereth said, placing a hand over her aunt's in a caring gesture. She stepped back upstairs to her room, though her gaze once again lingered on Andros' swords as she departed. When she arrived in her room, she traced a hand along the top of the tall mirror there. It was embossed at the top with a delicate etching of her grandparents' monograms. There were a few nicks in the side of the frame, her mother had said, were the result of youthful lack of care and roughhousing. Shinnereth took a few minutes to adjust her long, silvery locks of hair, styling it into a braid that ran along the right side of her crown, behind her pointed ears, and resting over her right shoulder. She allowed herself a few moments of vanity and self-examination. She was tall as her father, and almost as tall as Taurion, her male friend, and one of the tallest members of the entire mercantile guard. She had somewhat broad shoulders and a strong jawline and brow, hallmarks of her father, but soft cheeks and full lips with high cheekbones, her mother's, as she had often heard. To her own credit, years of fencing had also given her well-developed forearms and legs. Simply put, she knew she was attractive. There was no denying it. Shalastra, the goddess of beauty in the Red Moon, perhaps, had smiled upon her in that regard. She traced dark eyeliner in lines with winged points over her eyes in swift, practiced motions. In the traditional pattern, she also adorned her upper lip with black lipstick, as well as the center of her lower lip, extending slightly downward past it. As she usually preferred, she wore a mix of attire from elven culture, a robe not unlike the one Sindora was wearing, although this one had admittedly less modest hemlines and was without silver filigree. Simple black was enough. For a sash, she opted for one of silver and white patterns. Then, borrowing more from human culture, she had opted for black hose and knee-high, flat-soled leather boots. She cast a gaze toward her saber in the corner of the room, next to her unstrung bow and quiver of arrows, and frowned.
After I'm named, would it want to cause any trouble?
She muttered to herself, and reluctantly left without them. At the last moment, however, she hesitated and grabbed her necklace. It was a spiral silver chain bearing a disc-shaped silver amulet. On one side, it bore a Ranthe symbol, and on the other, Rhiannon's. There was also a marking of her family crest present on both sides. She put it on, deciding to place Rhiannon's symbol so that it was more visible. When she emerged from her room, she saw Sindora, now penning a letter at the tea room's table. She didn't look up immediately, glancing between her own letter and the one Shinnereth had received earlier. Some part of me wishes that I had forayed into diplomacy instead of being an archivist. Perhaps then I could have done something to prevent this. There was once a time when the Empire would at least control their citizenry, for all the other problems it had. But now, too afraid to enforce peace if it costs them power, hiding behind their walls of paper. She dipped her fountain pen in its inkwell and looked up at Shinnereth, smiling a bit. Ah, Shinna. You look lovely. Tell Tarion I said to behave around you. Although, he'll probably have to duel all the other young men for your attentions. Perhaps even some young ladies. She allowed herself half a smile. Go have fun now, and give everyone a warm greeting for me, Sindora concluded, offering a nod and dismissal. Shinnereth shared her smile and said,
I'll try my best.
Well, be sure to tell your parents you send your love, Sindora stated, removing her pen and writing once again. The town square was bustling by the time Shinnereth started to walk across it. Iron sconces bearing glass spheres of blue-white mage flame shed their light at regular intervals all around the periphery of the square, and she could see the tranquil sea beyond the mirror in the distance. The mirror guard, with their silver spears, stood where they always were for their eternal vigil, breastplates and helms gleaming. Some of the townspeople were still going about decorating for the naming ceremony that would take place on the morrow. They had set up a few pennants along the trees that were spaced similarly to the mage flame sconces about the square, and a staggering number of chairs had already been set up in evenly spaced rows in front of the mirror. The only other people visible were the acolytes at the cathedral, who tended to the sacred moth grove that encircled it. Even at this hour, they were gathering silken cocoons into baskets and pruning the grove of pests and weeds. A few townspeople casually greeted her, giving her a swift bow. Or, more rarely, the greeting gesture. She responded with the gesture in kind, touching her forehead and then moving her hand upward to the sky with an accompanying nod. It was a cool, pleasant night, and she breathed deeply of the seaside air. As she walked, her gaze moved toward the dark sea, and her thoughts drifted likewise toward a darker place. One would imagine, even if they were the heroes of the realm, that her parents could at least appear for her naming. A naming ceremony only happened once, after all. She sighed. Oh, of course, they had to be about the business of raising elite dragon riders. So much good that's doing over there in the icy armpit of the world, when there apparently was a band of bloodthirsty marauders and pirates just south of her hometown. The inn was still a distance away, and she decided to walk more slowly to consider things. Time in the archivist's library had informed her that there was, unfortunately, far from only one band of marauders around, and a great deal of them were close to the Grand Academy of Dragons. Shinnereth looked to where the horizon met the water, where she was able to just make out the clouds along the far horizon, and the previously calm waters were now disturbed by a few ripples from the gathering wind. She found her hand tracing the chain of her amulet down past her clavicle and lower until it touched Rhiannon's symbol. She recalled the first time learning of Rhiannon and seeing her symbol. It was the crescent moon, enameled black against the silver, accompanied by a curved blade. Rhiannon wished her to make the most of what she could. Bloom where planted. Revel in your beauty. To dance in the darkness, as it were. There was something else. The strange dream she had felt unusual in more ways than one. Here in the dark, in the town square not far from the mirror monolith, she thought it would be a good time to consider if it had another meaning. Behind the dice, Shinarith will now roll Academics plus Intellect in an attempt to determine if her dream might mean something, or be related to other dream chronicles she has heard of or read about. She will get a nocturnal bonus die, but her specialty for being creative will not apply here. Critical success. Shinarith rolls 5 successes out of 7 dice. Let's see how this influences the narrative. There had to be something else to her dream. She realized it held some portent. The mirror, long known to be an arcane object of importance, was known to be a volatile and powerful thing. So much so that an entire segment of their own guard, the Mirror Guard, stood in eternal vigil to guard it. Tomorrow, she and all the other Maloth Andrim of her age would sequentially place their hands upon the mirror during the naming ritual. Something would happen. She was sure of it now. But there was no changing it. She had to know. Resolved, she moved forward, out from the somewhat secluded path of the square separated by trees, and into the area in front of the Mason's Table Inn. A number of people were lining up outside to be greeted by the innkeeper, Octavius, who warms the hearth. His bombastic voice carried even over the idle chatter of other townsfolk. He recognized Shinarith, and his eyes lit up. He was an older elf, though still with a pronounced sense of sturdiness and poise. His dirty blonde hair hung in curls over his shoulders, and his rolled-up sleeves and apron and the smell of the kitchen were all part of his persona. "Shinarith, it's been quite a while," he said with a smile. He held out a warm hand and offered her an enthusiastic handshake and one-armed embrace. Shinarith tried to respond with a more traditional gesture of greeting, but gave up halfway through as she saw his embrace coming.
"It has. I've missed this place,"
she responded, though the last word was little more than a gasp, as the breath was nearly squeezed out of her by the enthusiastic hug.
"I believe your friends are already inside at the table they like in the back corner. Big day for you all tomorrow, right? I remember when my ceremony of naming happened. Couldn't be more excited for you. Come in, come in," he said, finally letting go and gesturing with gusto. He was a bright moonbeam, like always, and Shinarith couldn't help but share a smile with him. The interior of the place, as usual, was filled with the calm tunes of the lute, played by Octavius' daughter, Lyrisel, who paints with words. The whole interior was bathed in warm candlelight, with beige-colored walls populated by the occasional impressionist art piece. Past the hustle and bustle of other guests and serving staff, Shinarith saw her friends gathered about their usual corner table. There was a pot of the Mason's Table's famous vegetable stew, a few freshly baked and sliced loaves of bread, and assorted fish, mushrooms, and fruits. She could see a pitcher of mulled wine in glasses. The aroma was pleasant, if heady. She saw her friend, Tarion, who turned in his chair as she approached, noticing her. He was the tallest and loudest of the friends, and though he was technically not of age yet, he wore the long blue coat of the mercantile guard already, and it filled out well with his broad-shouldered frame. Like many Maloth Andrim, his skin was a modest shade of blue, and his hair was platinum, kept in a neat ponytail. He had a strong jaw and currently shared a broad grin. "Ah, the woman of the hour. We were wondering when you would arrive," he said, putting a strong hand on Shinarith's shoulder as she approached. Shinarith smiled hesitantly. A blush of heat rushed to her cheeks as she felt his eyes wander down her body. She recalled a few nights that she had spent with him in the past. Though it was behind them, she was glad that they had been able to remain friends when others had not done so. Shinarith returned the gesture by putting her hand on his opposite shoulder. She nodded quietly and took the last free seat. "Fashionably late as usual," said Phelan. Phelan was nearly the opposite of Tarion. Almost as tall, but much thinner, with a disarming quiet smile instead of brash confidence. He gave Shinarith a friendly glance, but turned almost immediately back to his food and the small book he had brought with him. He had it open, but partially hidden beneath the brim of his plate. Seeing it made Shinarith immediately recall the books she had left at home, and the last thing she remembered reading, Ancient Arcana and Awakening. Shinarith nodded at the last person at the table, Arrow. Arrow's warm green eyes sparkled as Shinarith sat next to her, and she shared a warm smile. Erlyn was shorter than Shinarith, but had a much sturdier build. Her broad-brimmed hat, indicative of farm work, hung on the back of her chair.
So, anything new?
Shinnereth asked, reaching for the soup ladle and bread. Phelan finally decided what he wants to do, Taryn said, taking a large bite of buttered bread. And I think I actually believe him this time.
Shinnereth appraised Phelan with an upturned brow. There was a pause in conversation, filled with the restaurant's ambience and lute music. Phelan glanced up from his book, sniffed, and finally spoke.
Phelan who charts horizons, or something to that effect. Something involving exploring and making new maps.
I like it. You always did like drawing them, even if they weren't real places, said Erlen with a smirk. Shinnereth nodded in agreement.
What about you and Taryon, then? Nothing has changed there?
Taryon nodded and spoke with enthusiasm. Taryon, whose sword strikes true. The captain of the Lady of the Waves suggested that one, and I'm inclined to concur with his idea. Erlen hesitated, but then spoke up. I may choose a name befitting my connection with animals instead of the rangers. What about you?
I'm still torn between Town Archivist and the Mirror Guard. To make it more confusing, I spoke to the priestess about Dream Chronicler,
Shinnereth said. Her friends grew silent. Shinnereth poured herself a small glass of the mulled wine, feeling the heat rise to her face. She fixed her gaze firmly upon the table. Your family has some solid connections to diplomacy and government. Wouldn't something along that line be more... Taryon finally said. He hesitated and trailed off, scratching his jaw while searching for the most polite word. Erlen interrupted. I believe it could suit. If you were in charge of the dream sermons in the cathedral, I may use them for something other than a midday nap. Shinnereth forced a chuckle.
Mother Zara is a good person, but a diverting storyteller she is not. I can't say I'm only interested for altruistic reasons. Dream chroniclers have access to some interesting texts about Arcana.
A look of skepticism flashed across Taryon's face, but it was Phelan that spoke up next.
That is true. I might be interested in talking to you about it sometime, he asked quietly.
I managed to get a hold of a book on Arcane Awakening recently, from the latest merchant ships. You can borrow it when I'm done,
she said. Phelan nodded slowly, then lost focus and gazed off into the middle distance, clearly in deep thought. That reminds me. Do you think you might touch the mirror and become awakened tomorrow? You know, since your mother was, Taryon asked. Everyone at the table looked toward Shinnereth, and even Phelan focused in.
Well, everyone hopes for such when they're young, to be the next Arcanist. I don't know if I have my mother's gift. No one else has in 200 years.
She was interrupted by the sudden opening of the tavern's front doors. Shinnereth saw none other than Mother Zara herself, followed by a harsh and cold outside wind. It blew out a few candles lighting the tavern near the entrance. The lute player accidentally struck a wrong note before stopping altogether, and the discordant sound hung in the air. There were a few stifled gasps. Octavius, who warms the hearth, cut through the awkwardness by approaching the door and gesturing to the lute player, who continued playing normally, albeit only after a few halting staccato notes. Evening, Mother Zara. Terrible turn in the weather, I see. Come have a seat and make yourself comfortable. We have mulled wine if you'd like, he said, taking her gently by the hand. Mother Zara, red in the cheeks, humbly nodded and made her way toward the back corner, at a table behind Shinnereth and her friends. Shinnereth gave her a small wave as she sat. She acknowledged her with a nod. Shinnereth felt a nudge on her shoulder. It was Arrow next to her. You were talking about your potential awakening, she said. I think you'd make a great Arcanist. Shinnereth barely registered this, instead focusing on Mother Zara, who seemed uncharacteristically distraught, though allowed one of the tavern staff to pour her a small glass of mulled wine. Shinnereth? Taryon asked, and she finally nodded.
Yes, sorry. That's nice of you to say. It's not something one hears every day.
And then noticed Phelan making eye contact.
I wanted to ask about that book you mentioned. It's about awakening? Anything particularly interesting?
Phelan asked. The normal din of conversation had picked up among all the patrons of the tavern again, and Shinnereth slowly refocused on her friends at the table.
Right, yes. The book talks about ancient sources of Arcana, like the Great Mirror, and how they might interact with Awakening. There were also some historical accounts of different kinds of Awakening,
Shinnereth said, recalling the book in her study. Phelan opened his mouth to respond, but Taryon interrupted. Halt for a moment there. If we're going to talk about this, we'll need you to distill it down to layman's terms, he said. Erlen nodded hesitantly.
Fair enough. I haven't finished it, but the basics are that we understand less about the oldest sources of magic. Especially those from the Storm Giants are older. We don't truly know how old the mirrors even are. Some Arcanists are born with abilities and can cast as children. My father told me he awakened when his dragon hatched for him. My mother awakened when she touched the mirror after her 90th winter,
Shinnereth said. The rest listened and ate in relative silence. Shinnereth's gaze drifted toward the windows. Even through the rain, she could just make out the silver of the mirror.
When awakening, some become Arcanists. Or they gain a connection to one of the planes of Arcana and can use their mana to manipulate it, to bring it into our temporal plane. Some of them, different kinds of Arcanists, gain a connection to a previously unknown entity, or gain other abilities such as nullifying magic altogether.
What kind of entities? Phelan asked, intrigued. Shinnereth lowered her voice and glanced around.
From the beyond, for example?
Sorcery? Tarion asked, his voice dripping with mock scolding. Shinna, where did you get this book? Shinnereth relaxed and rolled her eyes.
Oh, forgive me, Imperial Witch Hunter. I'll burn it in Morvak's fire right away.
Phelan ignored the joking between the two of them and asked again, just those, or were there other entities?
There were some mentions of beings that lived in places before us. Some predate the Storm Giants, or even the Sundering of the Plains.
Shinnereth said. She glanced at Mother Zara again, concerned with her demeanor. Normally an absolute rock of a woman, Mother Zara now seemed as though she had witnessed a shocking and unspeakable horror. She made eye contact with Shinnereth, and there was a pleading look in her eye. Shinnereth turned back to her friends and cleared her throat.
Well, it's getting late. I'll see everyone around the mirror first thing.
Tarion frowned intensely at the suddenness of this, but he glanced at Arrow, who had picked up on Mother Zara's state and knew of their connection. He reluctantly nodded and then put a hand on Shinnereth's and parted. It was good to see you again, he said. The touch was not unwelcome, but a mild surprise.
And you, Tarion, whose sword strikes true?
Her voice was sincere enough, but she felt that she had to force the smile ever so slightly. Phelan waited patiently until Tarion had turned to go and said, I'll have to look at that book when you get the chance. It was good to see you as well. Oh, you didn't tell me if you thought of a name. Shinnereth smiled at this and then turned to Erwin and Phelan, who seemed to redouble their attentions.
Shinnereth, who dances in darkness. As a dedication to Rhiannon, or at least her lessons.
Shinnereth said, right hand slipping to her amulet again. I think it suits you very well. Now I'll have to come up with one that is similarly fit for a storybook, Erwin said. Phelan chuckled a bit. Aye, may as well. Phelan rose and nodded once again before turning to go. Erlyn lingered and gave Shinnereth a parting kiss on the cheek, though it was deliberate and slow, unlike Tarion's earlier touch. She accepted it and returned one in kind. Do what your heart knows is true. I'll see you at the sunrise, she said.
Thank you, Arrow. I should go see what's troubling the priestess,
Shinnereth responded. After Erlyn departed, Shinnereth glanced at Mother Zara again. She seemed to have calmed a little, much like the inn as a whole. The lute player still played, though the tunes were slow instead of lively, and the crowd was beginning to depart. She was focusing on her food and drink for the moment. Shinnereth felt a growing sense of anxiety within her. The thoughts of her earlier dream again loomed over her, and now she knew that the appearance of Mother Zara was not a coincidence. Taking up two cups from her table and the remaining wine, she made her way over to Mother Zara. She put them down ahead of her as she sat adjacent to the priestess. Mother Zara was the oldest person in Moonchard Bay, almost as old as Andros would have been if he were still around. Even with the very lengthy youth of the Mel'Ath Andrim, she was now into her 9th century, showing her age quite visibly. The shroud of worry upon her brow made it even more clear. She looked toward the front door and then met Shinnereth's eyes only briefly, before seeming to lose courage. The amber flickers of candlelight at the nearby tables, as well as the mage flame sconces on the wall, reflected in her steely eyes.
Mother Zara, perhaps the wine? Something seems to weigh on you,
Shinnereth said. She put a gentle hand on the priestess's, who nodded slowly and took a sip. Tell me if you dreamt recently. Anything particularly strange? Shinnereth felt her earlier premonitions confirmed. A strange sense of resolved peace came over her.
Yes, I did,
she said quietly. Mother Zara seemed to somehow grow even more distraught and shook her head. A sandstorm, the city, abandoned, entirely empty of life. The moth groves, aflame, and then the mirror itself. Tranquility in the eye of the storm. I saw you and a strange reflection, Mother Zara said, scarcely more than a whisper, staring into the crimson pool of her wine.
My dream was the same. I did not see you, but what do you think it means?
Shinnereth asked, afraid to voice her theories. It means a great chaos and doom is upon us. There are other signs. Signs you could not know unless you had access to more of the Dream Chronicles.
Sufficeth to say, I have watched you for some time, child. You know this, of course. She sipped from her wine, and a sad smile flickered on her features for the most fleeting of moments.
I had a premonition about this, but was afraid to be correct.
Shinnereth said after a brief hesitation. I am certain, a student of the sword and the arcane, young, a child of two worlds, born of great promise. Tell me, who does that sound like? Mother Zara asked with a raised brow. Shinnereth considered the heroes of the Dream Chronicles, larger-than-life figures. Figures like her own parents. She was quite far from being able to accomplish any of their feats. Even if she did awaken tomorrow, knowing what she had learned from the book she had read recently, she was unsure what kind of awakening it might be.
I am, at most, a passing fencing student who has read too many books on Arcana.
Shinnereth said, still reluctant to accept that she could be one of those heroes of old. No, you care more for the books about the arcane than anyone else in this town, even myself. If you are not a student of magic, then no one is, she stated. Shinnereth sighed. Some threads came together, but many were left untied.
What does it mean? What will happen?
There are a few records of this occurrence. The oldest tale is wrapped in metaphor and myth, but it speaks of the end of the world and the beginning of another, which means much death. Death, unfortunately, is the common thread. Some are simply tales of massacres, great storms, Arcanaw gone awry on a massive scale, or other terrible cataclysms. But one always survives. If this is you, Shinnereth, then I simply ask, remember us. Remember Aranthe, Mother Zara said. She gestured to Shinnereth's cup, as if to ask if she was going to drink it. When Shinnereth shook her head, she downed it in one gulp. Under other circumstances, Shinnereth may have found it surprising, or even been taken to laugh. But for the moment, dark omens loomed in her mind, like the shadows of the emptying room. The lute player had stopped playing, perhaps some time ago. Octavius was shaking hands with departing patrons, and though he cast his gaze over to Shinnereth and Mother Zara, he did not bother to hurry them out.
And there is truly nothing that can be done?
Should the worst happen, seek out the room beneath the altar in the cathedral. I'll hide the key under the altar stones. The room itself is well hidden, but I know I've shown you when we've spoken before. It's where I hide the oldest books. Hopefully I, or at least that room, will survive this dream cataclysm, Mother Zara said.
Mother, please. Dream cataclysm? There must be more you can tell me,
Shinnereth said, combing a hand through her hair nervously. Mother Zara responded by taking her hands in her own and holding them tightly. Shinnereth, please, go see your aunt. If there is even the smallest chance my theory is right, then every second that passes is precious to us. He will never return. And if I am wrong, then perhaps in a few weeks we can laugh about what a paranoid fool I am, Mother Zara said. She managed a weak smile with the last sentence and let go of Shinnereth's hands. She stood up slowly, made the formal gesture of departure, and left. Shinnereth lingered for a moment in the near darkness. She steeled herself, taking in Mother Zara's words. She reached into her sash, withdrew two of the silver coins, and deposited them next to those her friends had left on her table. She took a deep breath and walked out. Octavius gave her a nod in parting and a smile, but she could barely meet his eyes. The square was empty now, except for the ever-present pair of mirror guards. The earlier rain had abated and left a thick fog. This left the stone paths of the square wet, so she had to adopt the labored but practiced gait of smooth-soled shoe and slick stone. She squinted and tried to make out the shapes of the archivist's office as it came into view. There was a familiar low wall and short gate to the garden, but behind it she did not see any light in the window.
She's usually still up reading at this time,
she thought, and increased her pace. When she reached the garden, she bounded over the short gate entirely and yanked open the door, causing a gust of air. Shinnereth, have you gone daft? What is the meaning of this? Senora asked. She stood on the other side of the door, now wearing only her shift, and carrying a book in one hand and a candelabra in the other. Smoke wisped from the candles, and the wicks still glowed in the now encroaching darkness. Shinnereth could see the draft of air she had caused had put them out. Shinnereth's ability to see in the dark, as with many of Elven blood, was better than humans.
And so it was that you could clearly see Sindora's exasperated expression. Shinarath breathed a sigh of relief, shutting the door behind her slowly.
I'm sorry, Aunt. I just let my imagination get the worst of me. I was worried something might have happened.
Shinarath stuttered. She glanced at the floor and shook her head. Well, no harm has been done. It's all right. Let's sit down, and perhaps this time I'll make some tea. A calming chamomile, perhaps? Shinarath nodded slowly and then took a seat in the tea room, plopping herself bodily into one of the chairs flanking the table and stretching. She took a few slow, deep breaths. She closed her eyes, but could tell that Sindora had relit the candelabra and was now preparing tea. You aren't going to keep me in suspense, are you? What happened tonight? Sindora asked. Shinarath wondered if she should talk about Mother Zara right away, or even at all.
Well, it was a good evening, I think. My friends all seem to have decided their names. They fit well. Even Phelan decided he wishes to be a cartographer.
Shinarath said. Ah, Phelan. A good one, that boy. As studious as you, even. I'm sure he would make an excellent cartographer. Erlin and Tarion too, then? Sindora asked. She walked over to the table as she waited for the teapot to warm and sat.
Yes, but you already know what they want to do. So, we spoke about that book I'm reading, about Awakening, and my ideas on it. I told them that I was strongly considering Dream Chronicler.
Shinarath said. Sindora nodded slowly. You already know my thoughts there. I still think the Mirror Guard would be enthused to have you. Probably a little more exciting than Dream Chronicler. And you'd look better than all of them in the silver armor, she said. Your parents and I will be proud no matter what you choose, Shinarath.
I appreciate it, Aunt. So I wanted to talk to you about something else. Mother Zara stopped by the tavern near closing. We talked for a moment.
Sindora leaned back in her chair, steepling her hands and casting a glance at Shinarath. That is rather queer behavior on her part. What did she wish to talk about?
What good would it do to tell her? What change could she make?
Shinarath considered inwardly. She lifted her chair and said,
Well, we...
She was interrupted by the piercing shriek of the teapot and nearly jumped out of her chair. Ah, about time, Sindora said, and walked to the wood stove. There was the clatter of the kettle and stovetop, and then two cups, and the pouring of liquid. The subtle aroma of chamomile and lavender filled the air. Sindora slid Shinarath's cup across the table to her, and stirred her own with a small spoon. You were saying, she asked?
Yes, I was concerned about my own alignment with Rhiannon rather than Aranthe. If I were to become a dream chronicler in Aranthe's church, well...
Shinarath said, hesitating again. Behind the dice. Shinarath will roll for deception here. This is technically an opposed roll versus Sindora's deduction. The result is two successes. Sindora's counter roll will now take place. I have not made a character sheet for Sindora, but I think a pool of six dice and a talent seems acceptable. This would be a challenging one for Shinarath to win. Since there are two successes given the talent, minus a 1 from the roll of 1, that is 1 success, and thus Shinarath is able to successfully deceive.
If fate has truly decided, then telling her is moot,
Shinarath thought.
Thankfully, Mother Zara seems to think someone who has both of the twin sisters in mind would be a good fit.
Shinarath said, I'm glad to hear it. If that means you've decided on Dream Chronicler, then I'll look forward to hearing your dream sermons, Sindora said, and she put a hand on Shinarath's in comfort.
It's a good place to begin,
Shinarath said, sipping her tea. Sindora nodded. It is late, Shinarath. I'll wake you early enough so that we can secure a good seat next to the mirror. She stood and finished her tea with a final sip, setting the cup down. Shinarath reached a hand out to her and said,
I just wanted to say, Aunt, thanks for everything. I love you.
I love you too, Shinarath. Are you certain you're all right? It feels too much like you're saying goodbye. You aren't planning on setting sail to escape the city or something like that, are you? Sindora asked, raising her brow. Shinarath managed to chuckle.
No, but the talk with Mother Zara, it put things into perspective.
Sindora nodded slowly. I do understand that much. I remember when I first decided to be an archivist. Things did seem to fall into place afterward. Sindora met Shinarath's hand with her own, briefly, before separating. You'll do wonderfully, I'm certain. Sindora moved away from her, snuffing out the candelabra and walking to her own bedroom. Again, the darkness encroached, but Shinarath's vision and familiarity with the house allowed her to navigate with ease.
She undressed for bed, and thoughts of her previous nightmare roiled in her head like the sandstorm. Given the dark portent of the priestess's words, she wondered if there was a possibility she may not awake at all, or perhaps awaken in a world left entirely unrecognizable. Session Notes. At the end of each episode, we will have a Session Notes section. This could include a character status check, health points, possible spells, and experience, just to summarize the status of each character that has a narrative focus. In this episode, that is only Shinnereth. In episode 0, it may have been stated that Shinnereth had spent some of her starting experience points on additional backgrounds. However, due to some rules changes allowing for the purchase of all kinds of backgrounds at the start, instead of restricting by category, she no longer had to do this, and retroactively gains 8 experience points. Due to gaining 4 experience points in this episode, she now has 12. Shinnereth currently has 9 out of 9 health, 10 out of 10 mana, and no spells. This has been an episode of Darksome Mirror. The introductory music for this podcast, and some tunes that you may hear throughout it, are provided by none other than Arong, and are used with permission. You can find Arong's music via the Bandcamp link in the description of this podcast. Additional music for this podcast is provided by the artist Dahlia's Tear and their label Cryo Chamber, and permission has also been gained from both parties. Separately, the artist Dreamstay Logic has also provided music with permission as well. Please see the description for additional information. The art for this podcast was created by the talented Flavia Winston. Thank you again for listening. Hail and farewell, until we meet again. May the stars guide you.